condition, my condition was in.
I woke up this morning with the sundown shining in.
Where's the money, Lebowski? Where's the f***ing money, head?
It's down there somewhere. Let me take another look.
I found my mind in a brown paper bag, but then...
106 miles to Chicago. We got a full tank of gas, half a pack of cigarettes. It's dark, and we're wearing sunglasses.
Hit it.
I tripped on a cloud and fell 8 miles high. I tore my mind on a jagged sky.
Okay, you know, you guys aren't privy to all the new so, you know... That's what you pay me for.
I just dropped in to see what condition my condition was in.
Illinois Nazis. I hate Illinois Nazis.
Yeah, let's cut to the chase, okay? What are you guys selling?
I lost you $60,000. There is no one who wants to make that money back for you more than I do.
There's just one thing, dude.
What's that?
You have to use so many cuss words.
What the f*** are you talking about?
Don't worry, nobody's listening anyway.
I woke up this morning.
Well, North Bay Stats and Jacks, that's anomalies, Mr. Matt Weber. SP futures are down a whole buck and a half. The Dow is up 14, and NASDAQ is up a quarter. 25 cents. So not much going on this morning after a nice rally yesterday. The market liked the idea that the tariffs on China were only 25% or 10% versus 25 on $200 billion worth of goods. So now, if you did this, as we, Kevin, how are you?
Oh, I'm doing fine. Woke up this morning. Everything's gravy after that.
Your what was his name? Walter Brennan. I get up. I read the obituaries. If I don't see my name, I get dressed and I go to work.
Yep,
it's a good thing.
That's kind of where I am, yeah.
That's,
you know, I'm here.
Would Vince Scully say he, like the rest of us, is day-to-day?
There was a sportscaster in Milwaukee whose name escapes me at the moment, and that every time he'd report that, you know, some ball player was day-to-day, then pause and go, aren't we all?
Yeah. anywho, the just a question how... Is President Bonespur completely bitches about the media on a daily basis? How about, Kevin, if I were to say instead of Chinese tariffs 10% versus 25% and have the market go to the moon, say Trump administration imposes $20 billion tax on U.S. population instead of 40. Or actually 25%, it's going to be 50 instead of 50. Just, I mean, that's the same thing, right? Just a little bit of a different toss. Now nobody did. Are these guys just not smart enough to be as evil as I could be, or what?
When it comes to the economy, media people not very smart?
Yeah. Well, I mean,
that's a rhetorical question.
But, right? I mean, it's out of all the people that supposedly can't stand the man and his administration, you don't see any news media outlet, maybe it's bad ratings or something, that drones on and on about this being a tax on you. Hey, Trump supporter, hey, Trump voter, guess what? These 15 items are now 20% more on you, not the Chinese. Nobody's doing that.
In many cases, they do say he's ruining the economy, but they don't really. We've talked about this before. There's a whole lot of media people who they just don't understand subject matter. They know how reporting works, but when it comes to subject matter, they're ignorant, and that's why we get so few good follow-up questions when you see some of the interviews.
Well, it's almost like if you and I are on opposite sides of a Senate race or representative race or dog catcher race, we can say all kinds of bad stuff about each other, but I can never say, well. As you can imagine, candidate O'Neill is all for the drug companies because guess what? He stuffed a $40,000 check in his pocket from Pfizer last year. I'll never say that because I have one of those skeletons in my closet too. Right? There's places I probably would go there. That's where they wouldn't want me as a candidate. But There's places they'll never go. They'll never accuse the other person of taking money from somebody, and that's what bought their vote, because they obviously have people that gave them money that bought their vote as well. It's just that.
Well, and I won't say never, because you may recall. It was John Kerry who's. It was always George Bush and his friends in the oil business.
Well, yeah,
and that was a constant drumbeat from him. So that was one instance where someone did do that. You know, he kept trying to paint that picture of Bush as beholden to oil interests, maybe that was fair, maybe that wasn't fair, but he did. But you're right; for the most part, they don't.
Actually, Trump did some of it, and kind of rightfully so, because his campaign was self-funded, right?
A lot of it.
Yeah, I tell you what, I never blamed the man for that. I would say go right ahead with that. I had no issue with that. Did you?
No. You know, the only issue anybody could possibly have is say if we're going to do that, then only rich people can run.
Well, that's a problem.
But it doesn't really matter, because if you're running for a national office and you win, you're going to be rich by the time you're done. So I guess it doesn't matter.
Well, it depends on who you are. I mean, Senator Simon wasn't. I don't know. He took the very minimum amount. He got out because he didn't like raising money.
A long time ago, though. Everybody, yeah. If you look at the financial records, the financial filings of people in Congress, their investments seem to go quite well when they're in Congress.
Well, you know, I don't know if we want to spend a whole lot of time on it, but my question is, I don't think that Senator Durbin or Senator Duckworth had a lot of personal assets rolling in. I surely don't think Senator Duckworth did. Now, I know along the line when they're in there, they can build up their political, their pack thing by doing breakfast and those kinds of things and picking up their war chest. But I also know it's fairly tough to pull that over to the personal side. How exactly do they personally make money? Because it's a full-time job. It's not like an alderman here where you could actually be a lawyer, you know, getting every zoning variance in the city runs through your law firm. It's pretty obvious how they steal. But how exactly does a senator or representative get that dough, Kevin? I mean, I honestly don't know.
We need to get a guest on the show who really knows that subject matter, because there are so many examples of someone who entered the Senate with not much and retired from the Senate a millionaire several times over. Most notably in recent vintage would be Harry Reid, who.
Yeah,
seemed to accumulate a whole lot of wealth while he was in.
Well, I don't.
So I know it happened, but I can't. You know, I can't give you chapter and verse on that. So it's probably not even fair for me to bring it up.
Well, it's a fascinating subject, Kevin, because I know that you can go in and you can have your personal political pack, okay, and you can constantly be picking up cash, and really you need to, you know, in today's world, for your own campaign. And I know that when guys used to come with the SIBO, when I was on the board, we'd have back in those days, and I actually thought it was, you know, their listeners can have their own opinion and tweet us and let me know what they think, but somebody would show up. Like we had Tom, who was the speaker after Tip O'Neill. We had a bunch of guys came through. Big tall guy, Tom something-something from Washington. That was his name. Anyway, but they'd come in, and they'd do breakfast at the SIBO, and you gave them, I think the maximum allowed at the time, Kevin, was $1,000. So, I mean, I don't think these guys were flying into Washington just to see us for $1,000. But on the one hand, you're sort of helping them out. But on the other hand, they're actually forced to meet the board of an exchange and to find out what's going on here. What do you guys do? You talk about what you do. And it was an hour and a half of very serious conversation to where you really are out meeting the people you're governing. I mean, and if you did two or three a day, I think you end up the better for it. And I don't know if the $3,000 is going to make you rich, because that was, I think $1,000 was the limit at the time. This was 1998, so it's, who knows, what is it? Probably $2,000 or $4,000 or something. I don't think it's 20. I mean, I don't think it is, but, so now, you can raise whatever you want for your campaign / political action committee. That's what made Dan Rostenkowski so powerful, is he had the world's biggest PAC. So if you were running for representative in Idaho, he could flip you money and you owed him one, basically, right? So, but I don't, and obviously every time you fly somewhere, it's going to be a political event. Every time you have dinner, you're not going to pick up a check on your own personal American Express. It's going to be on that one. So you're going to eat for free and drink for free. So, I mean, you get all that stuff, but I still don't know how you transfer the millions of dollars into your personal wealth. Now, can you one day go out and give a $2,000 rubber chicken, dinner speech for your PAC and the next day do it personally while you're still a senator? I don't know. The guys at the board of,
I don't know what while you're a senator, like I said, we need to get a subject matter expert on with this. But the, I do know you can start to draw down some of the political funds you've accumulated at the end of your time, if not during, it just becomes taxable income.
Okay, because I know when Rasty, he could have switched it over to all of his personal stuff if he would not have run the last time, and yet he ran anyway, and then they kicked him out of Congress, and he ended up losing all that money somehow, and he couldn't pay for his own defense with it. Some weird story, but if he just wouldn't have run
right,
the last time.
He probably couldn't use it for his personal defense. Now, on the other hand, if you have all this accumulated PAC money, you can continue to be politically active,
yes,
do speeches, do all of that, and use it to fly first class, stay in four-star hotels, five-star hotels. You can do that whole drill, and it's sort of like the Clintons living on the foundation. We do so much good. Yeah, you also live pretty well.
Oh, sure.
on foundation funds.
Well, the guys in the Federal Reserve that I know, when they go give a speech in in China or someplace, the Chinese group could very well, obviously they're going to pay for the airfare and the hotel, but they could pony up a lot of money for that speech. But I say a lot of money, it could be 20 grand. That money goes right to the Fed. They don't get it. There's no way that they're getting that money as an employee of the Fed. So
yeah, of course not.
So I'm wondering as a senator if you can actually take the money personally. Maybe you can. Obviously, if you can do that, that's an easy way to make money. Because what's the minimum those guys get for a show up? 50? 40? I mean, if it's a full dinner speech?
Yeah, I'm sure it's that much, yeah.
So, anyway, I've listened, every place I've sat down in the last 4 days, all everybody's talking about is this Kavanaugh thing, and everybody's got an opinion. I don't see how anybody could have an opinion. Two people in a room 40 years ago.
Well, I have no opinion on what happened. There's no way to possibly know. And there's not even a way to form one unless both the accuser and Judge Kavanaugh testify again. And from the sounds of it, it doesn't sound like she's going to appear in front of the Senate committee. A couple of observations that I do have. One is regarding Dianne Feinstein. She sat on this for months. What kind of a person would take someone's personal tragedy, assuming she believes it, what kind of a person would weaponize someone's personal tragedy in such a way rather than deal with it immediately and straightforward? I just am appalled by her. That's part one. And part two is the one thing that I'm waiting to see if it happens is that, as we've seen in so many of these kinds of public abuse cases, it's not just one. As soon as the first victim comes forward, we tend to get them, they tend to have more that come crawling out.
That's because people
that,
who are...
That's not a fair way of saying it, that step forward. So I don't know if we're going to see that with in Kavanaugh's case or not, but if he did it, I would sort of expect to see that.
If somebody feels that way and treats people that way, it's usually not a one-off event.
That's right. So, we should, that's one of the things that would confirm or deny to me. But I don't know, and I don't know if we're going to see that or if they're going to wait until, like, the day before the vote, and then they're going to engineer it again very cynically. To me, if we have an allegation here, let's deal with it immediately and straightforward. Let's not say, well, let's hold on to it until we can get the most political benefit
so
from
what,
it.
What,
I just think that's a really, really crappy thing for
well,
Feinstein.
Well, two things. One is, yesterday I said that there was this group of right-wing ladies, 60 of them signed some petition in support of Matt Kavanaugh and don't believe the lady. Now, yesterday...
Matt Kavanaugh was a football player.
Well, whatever this guy's name is. Kavanaugh. I know his last name.
Brett Kavanaugh.
All right, whatever. Whatever.
Whatever.
Whatever. The, be like Gilda Radner, whatever. The,
never mind.
Yeah, never mind. And yesterday I turned on Yahoo last night to find out what's going on my way to Bloomberg, and now there's 60 women from the left in support of the lady, the accuser. Now my first thought was, now does this make me a, I don't know what this makes me, because I remember seeing once the world's best in Western movies fights between women. So why don't we just put these 60 on the one side and know nothing, and the 60 on the other side know nothing, and just let them have it and see, and just film it. I bet it'd be fun.
I could do that. Even a game of Red Rover would be fun.
Yeah. Or a paintball or something, you know, something bizarre. But what would possess you to sign that letter? We don't know anything on either side.
The Kavanaugh letter didn't talk about the situation. It just said, here's my experience with him, the pro-Kavanaugh letter. This was just people from his past saying, this is what I know the man to be. It didn't speak directly to the situation. That's fine.
The only defense...
I don't have a problem with that.
The only sort of defense, if there is such a thing, for the Pelosi and this lady, and last night I heard was, God, why would you wait 40? Well, I said, I don't know. And I'm not defending anybody. I just take this as a for instance. Suppose we know somebody is just... I mean, he's certainly not a bad guy, but he's kind of a character. Suppose we know, I don't even want to mention his name as being a bad guy because he isn't. So suppose you know Thomas's brother-in-law is a bad guy, and it always has been. When he was, he was 5 years old, he took every time he could he kicked a dog or something. I mean, he just was and treated his girlfriends lousy and was just lousy, and did some stuff that bordered on illegal, but maybe nobody ever called the police on him. And you know what? Everybody knows people like that, Kevin. I grew up with a few. I mean, and as long as they're throwing garbage in the back of a garbage truck or we're working someplace where they can't cause any harm, what am I supposed to do about it? But if all of a sudden I do know all this stuff, and now the guy becomes, I guess if he becomes mayor of Oak Lawn, I don't care, but someday when he becomes Supreme Court Justice, I'm going, wait, whoa. I know this guy too much. What was the movie with the...
But we're not, I'm not talking, Tom, about, about waiting years. I'm talking about Feinstein waiting months.
I know, but I guess the quip by what I'm trying to get to, and I have no idea if this happened, the lady may have said to her, hold on to this unless it looks like he's really going to get in. I mean, that'd be kind of weird, but... I'm not surprising.
Well, yeah, considering that it looked like he was going to get in from day one.
Well, I know. That's another thing. So, I just wish we wouldn't get always half the story, because people are, fighting about it, knowing half the story. We're never going to get this whole story. I don't think.
No, we are not. I think that's the way it's going to be, so everybody's going to have to decide credibility. But, meanwhile, you have Keith Ellison running for Attorney General. He's the... DNC deputy chair, co-chair, whatever he is, and the same thing. We get not a peep.
Yep.
This is a significant guy on the left side, and he has accusations of abuse. Started with the girlfriend's son because she also didn't want to make a big deal about it. But once the son said something about it and got the full attack, she stepped up for him. And, she has released medical records. She has, testimony from former bosses who she informed about this situation at the time, from a psychiatrist. She has all of it, and it's really well documented, and it's recent, and we get not a peep. So when you go back to the, the media bias side of this, that's crazy.
Well, who knows who they glom onto, Kevin? I mean, you can just go every story right and left where somebody gets pilloried by something and the guy next to them did the same thing. I mean, that is happening all over. That's what I think you and I probably could agree on. This whole idea. I mean, there's people that I'm going to assume, for instance, that this guy didn't do it, or he doesn't remember it, and neither does she. She obviously remembers something.
I was going to say she obviously remembers
something.
Her way, anyway.
Yeah. The idea, well, should you withdraw? If I didn't do it, or didn't remember, or didn't think I did it, why in God's name would I ever withdraw because somebody from Somersville made an accusation? I mean, this whole, I don't know, Me Too feminine movement, that all one lady has to do is accuse a guy of something, and from 40 years ago, and the guy's supposed to drop out of life and quit his job. You know what? Screw that. I mean, because I know an awful lot of girls that misbehaved when they were young, too. And I don't really want any bad one. And half of them, they're all married with kids and doing fine right now. What am I supposed to do? Go tell her husband that they took advantage of some guy because he had too many drinks one night? I mean, come on. I mean, at some point, you got to let this stuff die. But now, what I always cut the line is, if it's consensual and everybody's had a few cocktails and nobody got hurt, I guess it's just a part of growing up. I mean, but if all of a sudden you actually did seriously take advantage of somebody and they wanted to cry out and you covered their mouth, that's a little different. But how the hell does anybody know, Kevin? How is anybody ever going to know? SP Futures down 150, Dow Futures up 19, NASDAQ up 25 cents. Be right back, Stocks and Jacks.
Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. We've talked a lot on the show about risk and suitability, about how your portfolio should match your age, income, and risk appetite. It's been hard for investors to maintain that suitability in the last several years due to a Fed strategy that has driven interest rates to virtually zero. You may have even heard that the Fed was trying to drive conservative investors to a riskier portfolio on purpose, for whatever reason. I'm sure you're aware of investors that took some increased risk, such as longer-term fixed-income securities, and are now unhappy with that choice. At PTI, we've always stressed total portfolio risk awareness and tried to minimize chasing returns in a tough environment. Well, now it looks like maybe interest rates are moving more towards historical levels. Everyone needs to be aware of what that continued movement might do to your portfolio, both good and bad. We also have a stock market that seems to have stalled, at least for the short term. I think it's time for everyone to take a serious look at their goals, their risks, and their portfolios. Do they match? If not, we can help. We have a signature protected index program. We have ways to hedge against interest risk. We can make that portfolio right for you again. Go to PTISecurities.com or call us right now. The market can change very rapidly. That's PTISecurities.com.
Hi, I'm Audrey Johnson, an owner of HomeSource Realty and a frequent contributor to Stocks and Jocks. If you're nervous about the stock market and considering diversification, or are looking for a rate of return way better than your banks, consider adding rental properties to your portfolio. Whether it's a condo, single family, or multi-unit building, I can help you select a property that meets your financial needs. Call or text me at 708-349-3456. That's 708-349-3456, or visit my website at myhomesourcerealty.com. That's myhomesourcerealty.com.
Hello, I'm David Andelman, founder and president of DAX Research, a registered commodity trading advisor. I'm also a wealth manager with PTI and a frequent contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio show. For more than 30 years, professional traders at the CME, including four past CME presidents, have chosen DAX Research to help guide their trading. That same research is available to you. We are offering three research newsletters: the Daily News, our Daily Stock and Futures Trading Recommendations, and our twice-weekly top three tiers of recommended stocks. Each of these reports are available via email. To benefit from the same research professionals have used for more than three decades, call me and get 2 weeks free with a one-month subscription, or you may also call me for a free portfolio analysis to see how we can work together to build your future. I'm David Andelman, president of DAX Research. Call toll-free 1-800-821-4968. Stock and futures have risk of loss and are not suitable for everyone.
Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. Confused about investing these days? I suspect you are not alone. Investing was never easy, although at times it may have seemed so. I think one reason behind the current concern, although maybe not explained as such, is how the fluctuation in the American dollar and the associated politics is affecting your investments and your wealth. It may not be enough to make some money in your investments. You may need now to make enough to exceed the amount that your leadership is depreciating the value of the dollars you've worked your whole life to accumulate. That same leadership has seen fit to maneuver risk-free interest rates to near zero. Providing positive risk-averse returns in a zero-interest and declining real wealth environment is by far the toughest assignment I've ever had in my years as a money manager. I'm sure that a lot of you have heard that one way to possibly deal with this problem is to invest in so-called hard currencies like silver and gold, the idea being that they will retain their relative value in the face of devaluation of paper currencies like the dollar. To be honest, I have never been a gold bug. I've always had faith that having enough dollars and a good investment strategy was good enough. Now I'm not so sure.
but I do know that if I did invest in gold or silver, I'd want to do it in the same manner as we do with PTI for investments in the market, with defined risk. If you feel the need to invest in gold or silver, we can do it using the same strategies that we use for our protected index program. No matter what you invest in, we feel that you need to know and control your risk. Find us at PTISecurities.com. That's PTISecurities.com.
Is your business being challenged by the complexities surrounding healthcare reform or other matters related to human resources management? If so, then Cognos HR can help. A longtime friend and contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio program, Cognos HR provides its clients with a perfect blend of strategic consulting and day-to-day HR management to drive overall improvement in business performance. Companies that join the Cognos HR family are better able to manage healthcare costs, enhance benefit offerings, and improve employee satisfaction by leveraging our access to Fortune 500 benefits. Our innovative onboarding and payroll technology, along with our constant attention to detail, enables us to provide the highest level of quality service to our clients. Now, your time and energy can be focused on generating business and increasing your bottom line. We'll take care of the rest. For more information, call us at 630-401-8810 or search us on the web at CognosHR.com. Cognos HR, innovation in human resources. Licensed in Illinois and Arizona.
Stocks, jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now. Right here, right now. Right now.
Well, welcome back to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Ollies, Mr. Matt Wilmer on the board, Mr. Kevin O'Neill. We have a very flat morning. S&P futures down 2 after a big rally yesterday. Now futures up 2. We've been talking for a few days. All they have to do is show something different than Armageddon on these tariffs, and the market's going to pop right up. That's why people are concerned about the downside. I mean, the upside, not the downside. Well, down a whole 5 cents, 69.80. 10-year yield, though, ding, 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 3.06. Blow through 3% yesterday, like dinner through a goose, Matty. What do you think about that? We'll see if it stays up there. DAX up 20.2%, FTSE up 18.2%, CAC around up 11.2%, so let's say 0.2% across the board. Over in Asia, which has been pretty volatile lately, volatile again today. Nikkei up another 250, that's 1%, 23,672. Shanghai up 30, that's 1.1%, 2730. Hang Seng up 322, that's 1.2, 27,407. These guys were nudging, they were under 26.5 two days ago, so somebody over there, maybe they think these things have bottomed a little bit. We'll see. I hope they did, actually. Don't want them to go much lower. Well, down 5 cents. Brent down 15 cents. Not much going on there. Natural gas, 2.93. RBOB gas, 2.00, almost exactly. And gold, we got up 450, 1207. Silver up 3 cents. Copper, 273. Boy, David made one hell of a nice call. Then he made it at 261. It's up 12 cents in the last 3 days, and that's a...
I hope you acted accordingly.
I don't really have an ETF that I, an copper ETF that I normally mess with for my clients. I mean, this thing usually hangs in this area and doesn't really move much, so, I don't know if there's a copper ETF. David said there was, before I had a chance to really look at it, it was up 12 cents, so I'll be ready next time, shall we say. What do you got for us, Traffic Weather Sports?
36 minutes past the hour. Good morning to everyone out there. We're off to a relatively good start so far this morning, but we do have a crash on the south side. Tri-State Tollway northbound just before the 83rd Street Toll Plaza. On the northbound side, there's an accident blocking the left lane that's causing delays as folks navigate around that. Expect delays of up to 20 minutes there on the Tri-State northbound just before the 83rd Street Toll Plaza. Everything else looking okay on the south side. No issues on the Dan Ryan, I-57, or the Bishop Ford. Traffic building on the Stevenson and Eisenhower. Kennedy still looking good, about 37 minutes from O'Hare into downtown. No issues on the Eden. Suburban tollways are all quiet. Weather today, we're cloudy early. And then it turns into a pretty nice day, actually. Could have an isolated shower this morning, but after that, partly cloudy skies, a high of 76, a little bit warmer inland. A beautiful day for this time of year. We're going to have one more really hot day tomorrow where we could have record highs, so enjoy this day today, and then we'll cool off this weekend. Right now it's cloudy and 67 going up to a high of 76. For our Phoenix listeners, some showers in the forecast today, and temperatures will drop, and it'll be a high of just 89. Right now it's partly cloudy and 87. In sports, Cubs bats figuring it out down in the desert as they blew out the Diamondbacks for the second straight night. It was 9-1 last night, the final. Brewers lost as well, so the Cubs' magic number is down to 8 with a 3.5-game lead on Milwaukee, who lost to the Reds. The Cardinals are 5.5 back. So the Cubs turning it on here down the stretch and looking to close it out this week with a division championship. They have 89 wins now. Their next win will put them at 90 for the fourth straight season of 90-plus wins. Hasn't happened in any of our lifetimes.
No, yeah, no.
White Sox lost to Cleveland 5-3. Chief.
You know, they didn't have one guy do it, one guy, Southside. Between Hamels and Montgomery, they really did get a Mike Bielecki year, huh? I mean, it was somebody they never even thought of was, you know, damn near carrying the staff. I won't say carrying because Lester's had a huge year and the other guys are decent too, but.
Well, yeah, Lester was an all-star and he's had a huge year. Hendricks has had a spectacular second half after he kind of had a slow first half. But they spent a lot of money on Yu Darvish and Tyler Chatwood, and obviously neither one of those guys worked out whatsoever.
Yep.
And, so they had to go to plan B. And luckily for them and for Cubs fans, Cole Hamels has been great, and Mike Montgomery was great last night, and he's been relatively good all season.
Yeah, he was good until he basically got pitched out a little bit because he never pitched that much. And
yeah,
he seems like he's back doing pretty decent.
And I should mention that, to the surprise of no one, Brandon Morrow, another guy they spent a lot of money on, has officially been shut down. So he tried to make his comeback and be ready for the playoffs, and now he'll be shut down. And so with Pedro Strop out with the hamstring issue and C.J. Edwards struggling, the bullpen is a little worrisome for me. Because it's not like you just add a bunch of guys now.
Edwards is sharp the other night. I think he might be coming back.
I hope so. He's a very talented guy, and they're not going to win without him. I mean, he needs to be really good.
Edwards' problem is always isn't that they hit him. It's that he walks guys. And, you know, it's when he walks the first guy, then he gets shaky. And it's really kind of strange because, you know, he's always been, you know, pretty tough-minded in the past.
Well, Kevin, as somebody who's played a bazillion softball games, when the guy before you gets walked and you walk up, you think you're going to have the first one right down the middle, and if you do, you wail at it. I mean, it's natural to take something off it to get a strike for the next guy.
Yeah, well, I would have wailed on it anyway, though.
Yes.
you know, seriously, my view of the strike zone is that it's very small and in my sweet spot on strike one, you know, when I first step into the box. And if it's not there, I'm not swinging. And if it is there, I am swinging. And if it's still a strike, but it's not in my sweet spot, then I'll expand my zone a little bit more, you know, with one strike on me. But it won't be the full strike zone yet.
So you know, if you get used to,
you know, I only my philosophy always is don't swing at crap unless you have to.
Well, you'll find that makes it's much harder to do that. If you're doing it in the social leagues, because you're starting a one-on-one count, you mean you absolutely don't want.
Yeah, I know. You know, that's why I always hated the one-on-one count, because it totally affected the way my approach to hitting.
Oh, gotcha. It's good for a pitcher, though.
It's good for a pitcher. I hate the one-on-one count too.
Yeah, it's Kevin. What'd you have briefly? Because we talked on it yesterday. A lot of a lot of what Lou talks about, and a lot of things that I are constantly basically ragging about. Is this constant combinations of firms into the bigger firms. And we started touching on some of that yesterday, and I've mentioned it a bunch of times, that a lot of it is, I'm going to say, demographic. And I don't know if you want to stop that, should stop that. You don't like the direction it's going. But when I say this, what I'm talking about is you know, in a lot of situations, you know, World War II dad, whatever, Korean War dad comes back, has a business, business grows, they're used to working pretty hard. Not saying that young people don't work hard, they do. Has a business, you know, be it a restaurant, be it a concrete business, be it a plumbing business, be it a heating and air conditioning business, whatever it is. And all of a sudden, the guy retires, croaks, whatever. And now there's, the kids maybe are involved, maybe aren't, maybe want to be, maybe don't. And somebody, always usually a horizontal, it's not that you have the concrete business and Kevin and I own the plumbing business next door, and we run over and say, Matty Weber, sorry your dad died. By the way, I'll put a bid in for the concrete business. I know you don't want to run it. That's not usually what happens. It's usually, you know, one of the big concrete places find out about it, come over $5 million. Matty says, geez, I got all this college debt. So does my wife. So does my brother. So does his wife. Let's each take our $5 million and get the hell out of here. I don't like concrete anyway. And I don't think you can have any kind of law that says you can't do that, because then it wouldn't be America. But you also don't want a situation where 20 years from now, you know, maybe your grandkids are, the only place they can go to is McDonald's or what's a hot dog place? Portillo's or something. That there isn't an independent place, or there aren't very many, or every single concrete place is either Ozinga or Prairie. I mean, or every single, you know, something else is, you know, every furnace repair place is Four Seasons because they bought 25 mom and pies out. I mean, how do you just assume that someday people are going to get back in the business, or do you just leave it alone? Because I don't know that that's the way you want the country to end up looking like, but Kevin, I don't even know if it's moral or legal to stop it. I mean, the idea of the horizontal consolidation, I guess you could interrupt that a little bit, but there may not be another bid in town. I mean, I don't know what you do. Do you? Or you just leave it alone?
Well, when you're talking about, you know, localized companies, it's not the same as when we're talking about major pharmaceutical companies or et cetera. So they're really, you know, I guess philosophically you can look at it the same way, but when it gets right down to it, it's those companies don't have so much critical mass that somebody else couldn't start up in competition with them.
I think I've been a business because of the sweeping overly largesse attitudes of how they do business. PTI started in 1991. Three or four brokers could say, I don't like where I'm working. They could form a firm. You could put up $10,000 or whatever, or not even that. Do your FINRA applications. You had your tests. You can open up a firm tomorrow. No friggin' way, Kevin. No way. They'd be on you like white on rice. It'd be way more money. It's almost impossible to pile into the business like we did. Almost impossible. And they can't wait to get small firms out of the business. They absolutely can't wait. And some of it is... Some of it is in people's, I won't say, people's smallness of the way they think. I was interviewing somebody, I was talking to somebody the other day as a broker-dealer, and he says, I've been in the business 20 years, I have one single count against me. And every time I try and do something, FINRA brings it up, a new client brings it up, and yet Goldman Sachs, Merrill Lynch have hundreds of them, and nobody cares. Yet if it's you individually, one traffic ticket, you're an ass. And yet the Merrill Lynch truck drivers could have 90 bazillion. What is it in human psyche that gives the big people a total break on that, that yet the person your size with one parking ticket, oh, he's got to be an ass? I mean, a lot of this is just human events. That's my question, is it has really nothing to do with law. It's just sort of human events. I don't even like your brother. He's running the concrete company. Screw him. Where's my $5 million? I mean, that's kind of really what's happening. And in the Chicago area, it happened to Canfield's. It happened to Romano Brothers Beverages. These are places that employed hundreds of people. It happened to Jay's Potato Chips. I mean, it happened to Wrigley Chewing Gum. I mean, it's not like you can't name them. I mean, they're all over the place.
One way to look at it, with the family-owned business and with things being localized is, what barriers are there to competitors getting into the business? And maybe that, you know, is kind of the overlooked criterion for approving things like that. When you're ready to say so what, do you allow a combination when there is no possibility that any competition could get back into the business?
So, I'm going to say, you know, Kevin,
it's what you described is the change in the industry now, is that you couldn't possibly make it happen now like you could 30 years ago.
I'm going to say that even if you were Potato Chip Kevin and your buddy Corn Chip Matt Weber,
Potato Chip Kevin about a bag a day.
But I mean, if you guys knew everything there was about manufacturing potato chips, for you to walk into a bank or to go out and say how many bazillion dollars you would need to totally recreate the Jay's plant, which is now a concrete slab, I think it's a concrete slab, or the Canfield's plant, for you to recreate that with the trucks and the bottles and all the other stuff, I don't see how the hell you get that dough. I don't see how you could possibly pay the nut on a total startup where you're able to actually do something like that. I don't see how you could. I mean, I could be wrong. There might be a God in heaven or an angel sitting on your shoulder and get you that money, and all of a sudden how many years construction are you before you make your first potato chip? I mean, I don't see how you, it's been, the Mayor Daley asked me, You know, why can't I get somebody to do a somebody to go build rail cars? And we actually had some time. We both had, were done working on it. I said, Mayor, do you have any idea what it would take to recreate? I mean, Pullman had, you know, 50 welding machines sitting in the corner. They could pull out and turn on. They had all these punch presses. They were ready to be used again. They had, you know, they had overhead cranes. They had all that stuff. It was an 80-100 year process of getting, and now the place is a parking lot. You want me to start that over? And the expertise. So what if I put an ad out tomorrow for 20 tool and diamond, or 20, what do they call the guys that put together the jigs, things you put the metal in and then you weld it together? Fixtures.
You say Irishman, but that's not right.
No. They call it, they're tool and die makers, but they're manufacturing engineers. How many people show up? Anybody? I mean, is any, once you lose that expertise and you lose that background and you lose the tools and the drills and the stuff you don't even think you're going to use again, once you lose that, I don't know how you would bring when Boeing says they're putting a plant in a cornfield in Tennessee, good Lord, Kevin, I can't imagine the literally millions of lines of to-dos that you need to start something like that up. Now, Boeing can pull it off because they have, you know, a couple other plants going and they know what they're doing. But could you and I do it to be a competitor to Boeing? Wow. Wow. I mean,
so does that answer your question? Is when you're trying to evaluate, are we killing competition,
yes,
forever, or are we allowing a consolidation? Because if it does get, if they do start jacking up all the prices and do all that, somebody else is going to swoop in and compete with them and force them to force them to address the market.
At some level,
if the answer is no, then I would say maybe we should not approve it.
I think what the answer might be, anybody can buy Canfields except Canada Dry, really, is probably the answer. And I don't know how you get there. Right? I mean, it's not like the people there can't sell it, and they should be able to. But
I get that part of it. You know, I do, Tom, but on the other hand, we are very specifically have crafted the laws of this country to say that we want competition.
Do we really? I mean, we have laws, but they haven't been used in 25 years.
That's so we say.
Maddie, how many of your friends even know what the antitrust acts are or care?
I think they all know.
Think so?
Yes.
You know, they don't think it's not.
I think they all know that they're not followed. But I think they all know what they are too.
I think a lot of people actually think that that's just business. If Standard Oil buys out somebody else, it's cool. I honestly don't think that there's a.
I would say more people in your industry are the ones that think it's okay, that celebrate it on CNBC every day and on Bloomberg and all that. The regular people hate it because they know their pricing is going to go up.
Okay. Well, as long as everybody, as long as people sort of know that, but I mean, I see
it's the elites in the stock market trading industry.
Well, Manny, if you own 1,000 shares,
there's also a problem I'm total quips today, but in the Bueller class on that, they didn't get it at all.
Right.
So you know, you do. There is a certain amount of that, you know, and everybody laughs about that clip of Ben Stein sitting there going, anybody, you know, anyone. But I think there is a fair amount of that we bring through the educational system that doesn't really get it. Intuitively, I think people understand that competition is a good thing, but in terms of being able to, you know, to cite the law and to recognize it, you know, I mean, that's the big thing, is do you spot it and look and say, what the heck's going on here? And I think in a lot of cases we're very, very accepting of the way it's gone.
I don't think people are ignorant to the point where if there's two saloons in town and one guy buys the other one and closes it, that your prices are going up. But I think most people sort of get that. Maybe I'm not accusing them of being that ignorant, but I don't know that it's hard for me even to the small things. I mean, they're not small, but I'm going to say the combinations in the oil companies in the city of Chicago and the amount of gas stations, I'm going to say that the combinations have cost everybody who's bought gas in Chicago for the last 25 years a minimum of 30 cents a gallon. And at that level, and I've been a contact lens wearer since I was 16, And every time a new company came out with contact lens solution, somebody bought them. And I'm going to say for, I'm pushing 50-some years, 40-some years, that every time I bought contact lens solution, I paid $2 more a jug than I would have when I buy them twice a year. So does it matter that much to me? No. But is it there? Yeah. I mean, and I think I think people don't have a clue, because I honestly don't either, except for the stuff I use a lot, of where every little wrinkle, where you're paying more than you should be. And I think it's only getting worse and worse. I mean, obviously anybody doesn't think you're paying more on an airline, I mean, you're out of your mind. I mean, because there's four airlines left. I mean, there's some competition if Southwest happens to fly there, but God bless, if you're going from, well, talk about the people in Cincinnati, Kevin, that Southwest finally flies there, and how much their fares have gone down from the other was, yeah, the Uniteds.
Well, and that goes back to what I said about barriers to entry is we do have barriers because there's a finite number of gates and who owns them and who regulates them. Again, you look at the airline combinations and say, you know, am I killing competition? And in many of the cases, it's yes. And then in some places where you do have a Southwest or one of a handful of other airlines where it's coming in, then the answer is no. The problem is, can Southwest get gates at O'Hare if you need to fly out of O'Hare? Can Southwest get gates at, you know, I don't know, you know, some of the commuter airlines, or Indianapolis or Cincinnati or wherever? And that's what doesn't seem to be considered.
Well, in some ways, though, we'll go on to sports here in a second, but some way, Kevin, it is considered dramatically and evilly. I use the term evilly because part of the deal for O'Hare being locked up to only a few airlines is that the city charges an outrageous amount to land and to park there. If you let Southwest in and gave them a whole bunch of gates and all of a sudden people's had to drop their prices, the first thing they do is jump on the city and say, wait a minute, we had an implied deal here, right? They won't say it in so many words, but the O'Hare gets egregious amounts of fees out of these airlines. That's why airlines, for a long period of time, never wanted to make any money. Everybody basically bleeps them. United Airlines, when they went bankrupt, what do they owe Colorado Springs for landing there and for the they owed them a fortune. I'm gonna say that. The deal with O'Hare, the city is absolutely a partner in crime. Newark, same way. I mean, when United took over Continental, what did they? They gave Southwest six landing slots? Six? That because Newark must have a lot of landing fees too. And if you let, you know, Kevin and Chief and Maddie's four new jalopy airplanes land there for like nothing, the other guys are going to say, well, that's not our deal, right? Our deal is we pay you a lot to keep these guys out. That's really the deal.
Yeah, even if they allow you the gates at full price,
yeah.
It's didn't we pay you a lot to keep them out?
I mean, every is well. We'll keep,
I mean, you have airlines willing to buy gates they don't need.
As Milton Friedman used to say, in order for a monopoly to last a real long period of time, in virtually every case, the enforcer of the monopoly is government. Camelot Edison couldn't be a monopolist if the government said, you're the only guy that can go down the street and do electricity. Right? Otherwise,
yeah,
somebody
or,
else
or,
will find...
You know, yeah, I agree with you.
And so I mean, they're involved in it. They're like a partner. So the last thing they're going to do is bust it up, right? I mean, it's a tangled web we weave, I guess is what I'm saying.
Yeah, it absolutely is.
So, hey, what about sports? What is with the Big Ten?
They're bad. They got a lot of bad teams.
Now, is Akron going to get a home and home with Northwestern? I doubt it. How about Troy?
No,
Nebraska going to go? Where is Troy? They don't even know.
Greece. I think it's in Alabama.
Actually, Troy was across the water from Greece. It was in. Yeah, it was in Persia. You should know that.
But, that happens a couple of times. Arkansas had one. I forget who they played last week, but they played somebody really bad and they lost to. And it was like the first time in 40 tries that that team had beaten an SEC team. So, you know, it's one thing to play these low-level schools and to play these bye games, you better not lose them.
By the way, Kevin's right. Troy is in Alabama, and guess what the name of the town is?
Troy.
Yeah.
What is their stadium? 10,000?
I don't know. I'd have to look.
But they're at least Division I, right?
Oh yeah, they're Division I.
Well, the reason why I asked that is because,
but they were still paid $1 million to go to Lincoln.
Yeah,
and then they're not supposed to win.
That's a lot of the budget for that program.
Yep.
What was the movie in Gladiator? Well, didn't the Romans beat the Carthaginians? The guys from Carthage. When what's his name went in and the Romans lost. Well, you guys didn't see the movie, but there was the guy who was the captured Roman general. They put him on the side of the Carthage people, and all the Romans came in and were supposed to kill them all in the ring. Well, because he was such a good general, he managed to beat the Romans, and everybody's cheering, the crowd's cheering because it was such a great show. And finally, one guy says, "Yeah, but weren't we supposed to win?" sort of the same deal.
Let's hit baseball real quick.
Yeah, yeah.
Because the National League races are still kind of fun. So the Braves have pulled away. The Braves are pretty well set. They're going to win. You know, the Phillies can't get to 90. The Braves only have to do 7-4 to get to 90. Honestly, the Braves probably only need to get to about 88 wins to win the division. Maybe.
No chance of a wild card there.
So they're good. Cubs Brewers is still a race, but last night's developments were huge. So if that repeats again tonight, I'd be willing to declare it virtually over, because the Cubs would have to go 5-5 just to get to 95 wins,
yeah.
and at the same time the Brewers would have to go undefeated to catch them. So I think that's out. Dodgers Rockies. The Dodgers have thrown a couple of really good body blows at the Rockies the last two nights. The Rockies have to win tonight, or they'll be 2.5 back and in a lot of hurt. And the Cardinals fell out of the wild card for a day, but they've managed to win the last couple of days, and they're back in. They're ahead of the Rockies by a couple of games now. So it's pretty interesting to watch. The American League is all decided, except for the fact that and the Yankees have pulled away a little bit in the wild card standings. You know, I think they're up to 2.5 games now. But the only determining factor there was who was going to get to host the wild card game, Oakland or the Yankees. And I tell you what, the winner is going to have to play Boston. So I would hate to have to run across country and back for Boston. So it really does matter that these two teams have so much geographic distance.
What Josh is a little wobbly on his. I talked to him last night. He had the Rockies winning and the Dodger, or then the Cardinals and the Brewers and the wild card. He's still hoping, but he's. He's wobbling.
I think the Rockies are going to be out altogether.
Think so?
Yep.
Yeah, I think that. I mean, that's where it's looking now. And if they come back and win tonight, they're back in the conversation. But if they lose tonight, they got some real problems.
Because, what are they playing?
You know, where they're looking is, especially if St. Louis wins, they could be 2.5 games out, and it's just really hard to make that up this time of year.
I would agree, Kevin. Thank you very much. But I talked to you on Friday. SP Futures down 275, now Dow Futures down 4, NASDAQ Futures down 8. Quebec, Mr. Russell Rhodes.
Hello, this is Tom Howe, the Chief. Markets close to all-time highs, interest rates close to all-time lows. Investors are nervous, no return on cash balances, may have some invested a little too much for comfort, some not invested at all, earning very little. The market itself seems nervous. Experts say you should protect yourself. Experts say you should never sell. Experts say to get out right now, yet they are all experts. Then again, they do not know you or your situation. There are also some strange things going on at brokerage and investment advisor firms. Some solid clients and even some diligent brokers and investment advisors are being tossed out. Not big enough, don't charge enough, whatever the reason. This may leave you in a place where there literally is no one knowledgeable left to talk to if needed. PTI Securities and Futures is still here. Either here at our Chicago home office or in Arizona with John Neal, we still believe in servicing clients and providing a home for the right brokers or investment advisors the old-fashioned way. We are competitive, but we are also available to help. The last few years have seen a straight-up market without the need of a lot of investment help. What about this year or next year? If things change in the markets, do you really think you are ready? We also have a long history of designing and managing portfolios for people just like you. Might be good for you to check us out at PTISecurities.com. That's PTISecurities.com.
Are you one of the millions of people who suffer with pain? Do you wake up in the morning with stiffness in the lower back or neck? Why are you using medication to cover up the symptoms without treating the actual cause? Painkillers, muscle relaxants, and anti-inflammatories are not the answer. At ChiroMed, physicians are trained to detect the cause of your symptoms and to correct the underlying problem. If you're ready to listen to common sense and do what it takes to make changes in your body that can affect your health for the rest of your life, give ChiroMed a call and set up a complimentary consultation. They are located in Orland Park and can be reached at 708-403-2727. 20,000 patients over 22 years have been treated at ChiroMed, and over 90% of them have had positive results without medication or expensive surgery. Isn't it time you did something good for your body too? Give ChiroMed a call. 708-403-2727. That's 708-403-2727. Let's get you pain-free and living again.
Hi, this is John Neal from PTI Securities and Futures and a frequent contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio program, as well as the branch manager of our Peoria, Arizona location. I hope you, like many of our listeners, have benefited from the outstanding market returns of the last several years. But have you recently become unsettled due to the worldwide geopolitical uncertainty, the increased volatility of commodities and currencies, or the looming Federal Reserve interest rate hikes? If you have answered yes to any of these questions, we can help you. Here at PTI, we offer a unique variety of income-producing securities as well as our proprietary hedging program to protect your assets. More information about these exciting programs and much more can be obtained from our website at PTISecurities.com, or feel free to email me at john@PTISecurities.com. That's john@PTISecurities.com.
Interested in promoting your business to a high-end audience comprised of entrepreneurs, traders, executives, and the everyday business person? Consider advertising on Stocks and Jocks. With a devout listenership covering the Chicago market, along with a vast online presence, advertising on Stocks and Jocks may be just what it takes to put your business over the top. For more information, contact me, Matt Weber, at matt@stocksandjocks.net. That's matt@stocksandjocks.net.
Hear ye, hear ye! The Homer Broadcasting System is on the air!
Stocks, Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
You are out of control!
Right here, right now, right here, right now.
Something happening here.
Loading up Stocks and Jocks. Downtown Miley. Just met Weber on the board. Mr. Russell Rhodes at the phone. SP Futures down 350. We're leaking a little bit now. We had a big up move yesterday. We were flat when we came in, but now we're down a little bit. Down 8. NASDAQ down 975. Russell, how are you?
I'm doing okay. How are you?
All right. Where are you? Are you on the road? Are you home? What are you doing? Are you
No, I'm at home. I got the AT&T guy coming.
Okay.
So I had to be out here.
So you're not like...
I couldn't even make up something better. That's it.
So you're not like laying naked in a coffin staring at dead animals on the wall like in the Skull and Bones or something?
Yeah. No, I just... Unfortunately, I got to be out here. I got nobody else that could do this for me. And
sometimes?
And you want to... Here's a suburban guy story. The reason that I have to do that is... Whenever I live right next to one of the elementary schools out here, and right after they drop off the kids at the elementary school, I can't get a cell signal for about 10 minutes. I think all the moms call somebody right after they drop their kids off.
Probably.
So I'm like, all right, I got to go old school and get a landline because of that.
Are they actually giving you a landline, a regular landline?
Oh yeah, a regular landline. I got to go buy a phone today too, man. Big day at the Rhodes household.
I'm gonna ask this. Are you talking about a copper landline, or are you talking about one through your computer?
This will be a discussion for a later day. I have no idea. I got one of those little plugs here in my office at home, so yeah, I'm probably gonna plug something into there.
Is AT&T your computer?
They're my everything.
I know.
Everybody has who they think the devil is and who they think's good. AT&T's been sufficient for for a long period of time, so I don't want to mess with it.
Okay. I'm going to guess they give you a new box, and you can plug the phone in the back of the box.
Okay. Yeah, that we'll see how the technology works today. I have no idea.
So, you know,
I have everything else from them. I just was getting away without a landline for a while, and now that I've changed jobs and work from home more frequently, I actually need a reliable phone. And my AT&T cell phone isn't working sometimes. Therefore, I'm going to get an AT&T landline.
Well, I'm tempted to go get one, and if you can find it on the site, landline, if you can even find it.
Oh, yeah.
Good luck with that.
That was, ordering the thing took a while. Ordering the thing may have taken longer than it's going to take to get the thing installed.
Well, in my cable bill, because I had the landline on my cable, it's RCN, but the city the city tax on the telephone piece was $21.
Oh my goodness!
It's unbelievable. And I mean, we were just talking about how the monopoly power that somebody gives somebody, it's only because the government makes out like a bandit on it. I mean, I don't even have what do I have? I have the pretty quick computer at home. I don't have the phone anymore, and I've got two TiVo boxes. Because I sort of share, shall we say. The bill's $170 every month, and the taxes are $60.
Mm-hmm.
So do you think the city likes the idea that there's a cable monopoly?
Oh, yeah. They don't have anything, and they slip the, your cable bill will go up, and it'll be where they slipped a little bit of extra tax on that.
Yeah, yeah. It's a, that's why it's funny, I was just talking to Kevin. We're talking about the reason why they don't want to let anybody in at O'Hare is because they charge so much at O'Hare that the airlines have to charge an egregious amount partially to pay the city.
Yeah.
And it's a deal that the citizenry probably sort of gets but doesn't really put a finger on. I mean, why would you? It's nothing you can deal with, so why would you lose sleep over it? But it really is the combination of the two is really the problem. The government that makes the monopoly or the oligopoly go, and then they take their piece out of it, which is really something when you think about it. And you know,
well, you know, when you fly, they and I fly every once in a while.
You fly every week.
Yeah, I know. And they, you'll see the breakdown between the taxes and the landing fees and all that stuff, and what the airline gets. If they broke it out and told you exactly where it was going, it'd probably drive you insane.
Oh yeah, absolutely. And then you've got this, and you've got TSA. And someday in this world, I don't think it'll be in my lifetime, but someday somewhere, hopefully in Maddie's, and we will declare there are no more terrorists, there are no more anything, we're going to go back to life the way it was. How are we going to fire 60,000 TSA people?
We're going to have to come up with a new threat.
And what, move them somewhere else? I mean, are we ever going to get rid of 100,000 cameras in the city of Chicago? I mean,
you have to come up with a new threat. That's what all the conspiracy guys say. They're like, you know, we were done with the Cold War, so they engineered 9/11, I don't believe what I'm saying right now. I'm just saying what they say. You know, they engineered that, so we've got a new threat.
But we got one that's,
you know, we need the people for.
And we got one that it's never ending. There's always going to be someplace somewhere that doesn't like us. And oh, by the way, when we knock off how many thousand people a year in drone strikes, and we don't always hit our target, we're always making somebody else who doesn't like us. So there's always going to be somebody who doesn't like us because we just smoked his wife or his girlfriend. It's horrible even to think that way. But if you look at it that way,
we're always going to have. There's always going to be somebody that they can. You know, there's always going to be somebody that we can point the finger to and say, that's our new enemy.
Yeah,
Wag the Dog. Remember Wag the Dog? They made up some country practically and said we were mad at them.
Yeah.
Or they were mad at us and then made up an incident and everything. I mean, I don't think it's that extreme, but I do think that, one of the ways that if we have a common enemy, you know, everybody in America, it's one of the things that one of the ways you can bring everybody together. I mean, we came together very strongly after 9/11. We really did, and then it's been kind of dividing ever since.
Well, and we came and people, if you had a chance, I read, I don't think I still have the piece of paper. Gotta hate when we talk about stuff like this. I don't know if I still, Manny, yeah. You remember where they, there was, you know, I don't know, I just, the World War II generation, it all it happened so fast, and they did, I don't think they had a chance to figure out how to steal stuff as much. Not that people were any different, but, I think people got a little more for, you know, the battleship, gun or the PT boat engine than maybe, I'm gonna say there was a 10% overrun, you know, but the guy who got the job, if you and I are making them, we had our PT boat engine plant, and we actually did the engines ourselves, probably, and we, you know, took the extra 10% and went to the local saloon and trickled it around, shall we say, or somewhere, you know, I mean, we didn't move to Monaco, you know, we didn't leave the country, people can do now, but now, I think, Manny, what were the stats? You remember this stuff sometimes more than I do. You got a younger mind. That out of some incredible amount of stuff after 9/11 and the Patriot Act, were all these you know, software systems and things for all these esoteric, you know, watching this guy's system, watching that guy's system, and virtually all of them were subcontracted out. Where the, you know, it was a $3 million project, you could actually get Honeywell to like do it for you for $1 million. And you just pocketed the two. I mean, you never even had to do it. I mean, the big joke in Katrina is that there was a guy who got the contract, we had another guy who got the contract, another guy who got the contract. At the end of the line, there was a guy in a dump truck with four guys illegal from Mexico doing the work at $4 an hour. You know what I mean? And the top of the chain was some massive contract to clean up in New Orleans. The bottom of the chain, the guy never even went to New Orleans. You know, the guy who got the, I mean, I think we see a lot of that now. I mean, the amount of cheating on the federal and local, I mean, it's really bizarre. I mean, you look at the numbers that you see, Russell and I talked about them last week, in the last 10 years since the Lehman fiasco, you really don't see, even with the addition of student loan, more than, you don't see individual families. They're in bad shape, but they were in bad shape back then. The average family has $58,000 worth of debt now, and back then it was $52,000. So it's up some, but it's not horrible, horrible. You know, the huge debt burdens are in state, local, and federal government. That's where the individual citizen or individual family of citizens has an $840,000 debt on their shoulders. Well, like, you know, 790 of it is government. That they really can do nothing about. You know, in addition to all these taxes and stuff they're paying and all these absurd fees, but that's the thing that probably got the Rahm father out of the mayorship. The absurd fees. I mean, the citizenry is not, I mean, we what did they used to say up at the First Stop Lounge? We may be pigeons, but we're not fish, you know. You know, I mean, at some point, even we will figure it out.
But we go in a different direction every once in a while.
But I mean, so it bothers most people to see the murder rate and the amount of the people in our area. There's even like muggings and stuff in Lincoln Park, and you never see a policeman. And then on a Sunday morning, you see three policemen in a bulletproof vest walking down the street giving parking tickets. I mean, every citizen knows, has to know that that's a miscarriage of manpower of some kind. Has to know, because they'd made much rather give you 10 tickets than stop you from getting knifed. I mean, is really the message they're giving people, and at some point every citizen has to look at it and say, God, this really sucks. I mean, I would think, but that's just me.
You know.
Economically, what are we doing with these tariffs? I mean, the 10 versus 25 was a one day celebration. Is that going to continue? How come? I'll ask you. How come the headline wasn't $20 billion tax on U.S. population versus 50. Go ahead and cheer.
Why would? Well,
now if I wrote the Onion, that would be my headline. If I'm an Onion, I'm the Onion guy.
If you're the Onion guy, and then, you know, even if you did it as an Onion headline, half the people would think it was real news.
Well, it is real news. That's exactly what happened.
Yeah. Well, but you know what I mean.
Yeah.
Because Onion's not real news. You're right. You know that, right?
Well, after. 10 years ago, when the headline was America desperately seeking another bubble. I'm going to say that was real news.
Yeah, well, it was just 10 years early.
No, I mean, aren't we? We want the bubble again, which we got.
I actually think this tariff thing's going to end up working out for us long term. I really do. There might be some short term pain behind it, but
what do you mean by working out?
There's a lot more that I feel like we've got a lot more bullets in this fight than China does, just because we get so much from them relative to what they take from us. The other thing is, I think that the rest of the world is secret, and this is actually from being over in Europe last week. The rest of the world is kind of quietly cheering us on with this thing, because everybody really does have a problem with the intellectual property problem that China kind of imposes their will on people to open up their market, and then their market doesn't really do you any good anyway. So I do think this is something that, maybe we don't like stylistically how he's going about it. We don't like stylistically anything the guy does. But somebody standing up to the Chinese while they're still growing, as opposed to when they're on top, might be the way to go.
All right, give me the connection between the economic connection. And I don't doubt that the way the news is being crafted, that the guy sitting there in the wife beater with the beer in the trailer is all for this.
Of course he is. And I actually think, you'll hear the most liberal of commentators talk about this, and they'll always preface things with the point that I just made, that I must agree that what China does on the intellectual property theft is wrong, but this isn't the way to deal with it. Well, what's the way to deal with it?
Boeing gave China the plans of the 787.
They needed it to make the tail.
Okay, all right. Well, what I'm saying is,
why do they need the whole plan?
Are you willing to send the chairman of Boeing to the nunnery to get paddled, or are you going to put her in jail? Or are you going to say Boeing can never do that again? If you're not going to do it, what's the point of putting a tariff on you?
Well, because the company chose to do that.
Hey, are we going to say that they can never? Yeah, are we saying that they can't do that again? What I'm saying is, this is my.
We're not saying that they can't do that again. We're saying that China shouldn't. That shouldn't be the prerequisite for doing business in China.
Okay, but
is there any other country that says the only way you can sell into our market? And you know what? India is going to be bigger than China in a few years. Does the same thing happen with India?
If
we want their airlines to buy Boeing planes as opposed to buy Airbus planes, do they want all the plans?
All right, conceptually, this is one of my biggest concerns with this administration. They're old and they're ignorant. They're fighting the last fight. I mean, I've been on the air 15 years, and for 15 years I've been saying, what are we doing? I mean, these guys are grabbing our technology. We're freely giving it to them, and I don't know what the shelf life of this stuff is anyway. You show them how to do a copying machine. Are they going to figure it out 6 months anyway, or 12 months? I mean, are we stealing stuff from people? I don't know. I mean, is every invention in the U.S.? I don't think so. But my point is, you asked me how I would do it differently. I do care about it, to be honest with you. I mean, I cared about it when every Beatles album they just made over there. I cared about it when they had, 90 bazillion desktop computers, and they bought one, I'm exaggerating, they bought 10 copies of Microsoft. Guess what? they recopied them 90 billion times. All right, but that's the last war. Now, are we willing to put out, you're as bright as it gets, are we willing to sit in a room with three or four other of our people and say, here's 100 items, defense stuff, submarine stuff. I don't know if you want to put copiers in there, whatever it is. Whatever it is, we're going to have a list of 100 things that we believe the processes should not leave this country, and the drawings and whatever. Doesn't mean that 20 years from now somebody's not going to figure it out. But have a list of 100 or 50 or 25 things we really care about. And I'm not smart enough to name what they are, to be honest with you, Russell. But we must have some idea. In other words, Boeing, you can't give them the whole plane, you idiots. You can't give them drawings of the whole Ford pickup. I mean, I don't know. Like I said, I'm not an engineer. We should have a list of that, and the crime should be here. not there for them asking for it. Right?
Right. Well, again, you just... It's really a matter of, you know, all the companies in China are owned by the government.
Okay.
And they dictate, we're not going to, you know, they tell you what they're going to do or what they're not going to do based on stealing, you know, for lack of a better way to put it, stealing from us. You know, and they don't put any value on intellectual property. I don't know how.
I get all that. But
I don't know how you go about explaining to a country that or a group of people that doesn't even value, you know, that somebody invented something, that they have some sort of right to it, that once something is invented, it is completely open in the, you know, it's out there.
I'm not gonna...
for anybody to use any way they want, which, you know, it's really just it's a cultural difference.
Okay, but is it really? You know, is it really?
Mm-hmm.
It is.
I'm trying to choose my words carefully.
Please.
I've taught a graduate class that was 100% people from China. And they cheated all the time. They copied each other's homework. They copied each other's tests. You know, we would assign homework to 22 students. We would get the exact same homework from 22 people. There was, you know, one person that turned in a photocopy of somebody else's homework.
You know, it sounds like our Latin class in high school.
I've got to be friends with a few of the students, and one of them said that it's my responsibility as the professor to make it too hard for them to cheat and force them to have to learn the material to get the grade. It's their responsibility to get the grade however they can. That's how they look at it. It's not their responsibility to learn the material. It's their responsibility to get the grade however they can.
Russell, you're preaching to the choir, bud, because yeah. We had some people from China at an agricultural trade thing, and when one of our guys lecturing to them went in their bathroom, they stuck a whatever you call it in the front of their computer and tried to drag everything down on the computer. So there is a difference in the culture.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
What I'm saying is don't...
So there is that. So,
well, let's be careful how many...
Okay, you said, and I agree with you, though, and they're probably fighting the previous war when they're using tariffs. So how do you fight that thing?
I think
that I just... You know, do you go... The last thing they want is, you know, some Americans going over to China and lecturing them on, you know... Intellectual property is not, free to everybody.
Well, I think we define what's important here, and the people here can't export it. I think it's one of them. But also, I don't get. I mean, we look at this like we are. That's what I totally miss about this administration, or wouldn't miss. Do they have a mirror? I mean, how much intellectual property here? I could name you the top five patents in basically the last three lifetimes. Every one of them has been stolen in this country. Everyone.
In my graduate program, in my PhD program, one of the individuals worked for a firm in Oklahoma that does nothing but bottle water and then send it out to all the, it does the off-brand bottled water for Walmart. And they have to get a patent on the screw top that goes on to it's why the screw top from one bottle of water doesn't fit on the other one, because they all have their own little patent for that piece. And if they try to change it just a little bit, there might be somebody out there that has filed a patent for different one, and they may have to pay that guy for it just to change things around slightly, even though that guy didn't do anything but change the threading by, you know, an eighth of an inch or even less than that. So it does go on here as well.
Well, I mean, Kodak,
it goes on everywhere.
But Kodak was a company that lasted for what? Damn near 100 years. And they stole the Brown camera company's patent. And yet everybody knew it. Yeah, I mean, come on. I mean, right?
Microsoft stole Windows.
Yeah.
From
I mean,
Apple,
so I mean, it's...
stole it from Xerox.
But I'm saying the Chinese deal with Boeing reminds me of the was it Dave Winfield from when he signed his big contract with George Steinbrenner. They asked him, "Gee, do you think you like did you put one over on George?" And Winfield said, "I didn't exactly sit on his chest." I mean, he's the one who handed it to me.
I didn't make him do it.
Yeah, I mean, wanted it, you know. So I mean, let's make a list of the stuff we don't want going over there, and anybody who does it, it's a problem on this end. Mm-hmm. I mean, right?
So do you think that's a better way to do it?
Explain to me how I know you're not big on booze, but suppose you're having a big company, you're having a bunch of company this week, and they all like shots. So your wife runs out to the IKEA. And picks up 10 shot glasses that were a buck and now they're $1.10. Explain to me how the difference between you paying a dollar more is going to somehow influence these Chinese to give back the Boeing drawings. I mean, that connection to me is so fuzzy.
Well, they're not going to get back the Boeing drawings.
Okay.
But they are, it's...
All I know is you're paying a buck more.
Okay, what are they going to do with the Boeing drawings?
Nothing.
They're going to start trying to make their own airplanes.
Good luck with that.
Stop buying from us.
No, good luck with that.
I know. That's. I mean, we're kind of using an extreme example here, but they're apparently there are Apple stores in mainland China that have nothing to do with Apple.
Well, but Apple makes all their stuff over there.
You know what?
How are we gonna take China and lop their legs off by their knees? And I'm no fan of the place. How are we gonna lop them off by the knees and still have Apple being the biggest? A poster child for everything that's wrong with trade with China. There's 65% margins because they're not paying anybody.
Yeah.
How are they going to stay whole in this?
How's Apple going to stay whole in this? Or, you know what? The proper way to go about doing this, and it's probably too late for it, is much like you do when you go after a single country that's been a bad actor. You build a coalition.
Yeah.
And our current president is not exactly a coalition builder.
No kidding. Hey, how about speaking of coalition? Let's talk about coalitions after the after the break. SP futures down 475, Dow futures down 24, NASDAQ futures down 14. Be right back, Stocks and Jacks.
Hello, this is Tom Howe, the Chief. Markets close to all-time highs. Interest rates close to all-time lows. Investors are nervous. No return on cash balances. May have some invested a little too much for comfort. Some not invested at all, earning very little. The market itself seems nervous. Experts say you should protect yourself. Experts say you should never sell. Experts say to get out right now, yet they are all experts. Then again, they do not know you or your situation. There are also some strange things going on at brokerage and investment advisor firms. Some solid clients and even some diligent brokers and investment advisors are being tossed out. Not big enough, don't charge enough, whatever the reason. This may leave you in a place where there literally is no one knowledgeable left to talk to if needed. PTI Securities and Futures is still here. Either here at our Chicago home office or in Arizona with Jan Neal, we still believe in servicing clients and providing a home for the right brokers or investment advisors the old-fashioned way. We are competitive, but we're also available to help. The last few years have seen a straight-up market without the need of a lot of investment help. What about this year or next year? If things change in the markets, do you really think you are ready? We also have a long history of designing and managing portfolios for people just like you. Might be good for you to check us out at PTISecurities.com. That's PTISecurities.com.
Hi, I'm Audrey Johnson, an owner of Home Source Realty and a frequent contributor to Stocks and Jocks. If you're nervous about the stock market and considering diversification, or are looking for a rate of return way better than your banks, consider adding rental properties to your portfolio. Whether it's a condo, single family, or multi-unit building, I can help you select a property that meets your financial needs. Call or text me at 708-349-3456. That's 708-349-3456. Or visit my website at myhomesourcerealty.com. That's myhomesourcerealty.com.
Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. Confused about investing these days? I suspect you are not alone. Investing was never easy, although at times it may have seemed so. I think one reason behind the current concern, although maybe not explained as such, is how the fluctuation in the American dollar and the associated politics is affecting your investments and your wealth. It may not be enough to make some money in your investments. You may need now to make enough to exceed the amount that your leadership is depreciating the value of the dollars you've worked your whole life to accumulate. That same leadership has seen fit to maneuver risk-free interest rates to near zero. Providing positive risk-averse returns in a zero-interest and declining real wealth environment is by far the toughest assignment I've ever had in my years as a money manager. I'm sure that a lot of you have heard that one way to possibly deal with this problem is to invest in so-called hard currencies like silver and gold, the idea being that they will retain their relative value in the face of devaluation of paper currencies like the dollar.
To be honest, I have never been a gold bug. I've always had faith that having enough dollars and a good investment strategy was good enough. Now I'm not so sure. But I do know that if I did invest in gold or silver, I'd want to do it in the same manner as we do with PTI for investments in the market, with defined risk. If you feel the need to invest in gold or silver, we can do it using the same strategies that we use for our protected index program. No matter what you invest in, we feel that you need to know and control your risk. Find us at PTISecurities.com. That's PTISecurities.com.
This self-directed trading is a lonely job. Online trading is not as easy as point and click.
No, it's not. Everyone, even professionals, need to share ideas and think out loud every now and then.
That's what I like about PTI Pro Direct. Their staff of former option floor traders really helps me choose the right strategy for trading option volatility and plan the time decay for my covered writing program.
Yep, nothing can replace years of trading experience to stop you from making that dumb trade and for saving a few bucks. We've all been there and done that.
Yeah, I have access to all that great trading advice and experience for just a penny a share for stocks, $1 for equity options, and $1 minimum a trade.
Our clients at PTI Pro Direct can call when they need a little help on a trade or just to talk about the market in general. We trade every day. We love this stuff.
That's what I like most about PTI Pro Direct. Cheap prices along with great advice from real floor traders. It's the best of both worlds.
Tell your friends. That's PTIProDirect.com. PTIProDirect.com.
Stocks, jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right
now. Hello, welcome to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Allen, Mr. Russell Rose. Mr. Matt Weber on the board. S&P futures down 4, down on 19. NASDAQ down 9. It's a slight pause after yesterday's big run-up. Big news, I think, today is probably the 10-year yield, 3.05. Oil's up a whole 2 cents, so that's not much news today. 69.87. Still can't quite make it to 70, but it keeps trying. Over in Asia, Europe will do first. DAX up 19.2%, FTSE up 10.1%, and CAC round up 10.2%, so slightly to the upside there. Asia, everybody's up. Nikkei up 251, 1%. Shanghai up 30, it's 1.1%, 2730, so back through the 2700 number, looking for 2750, maybe tomorrow, we'll see. Hang Seng up 322, 1.2%, 27,407, so well back into the 27,000 numbers. Maybe again, they will stay there. Maybe they have hit a bottom. Actually, they might have. Oil up 2 cents, Brent down 16, the spread is now exactly $9, exactly $9. Natural gas 2.93, RBOB 2.00. Gold up 5.10 now, 12.08. Silver up 4 cents, 14.23. Copper 2.72, so that's unchanged. Platinum another, I think this is another high, up 5.40, 8.20, 30. I don't really have any platinum futures. Do you, Eddie? I don't know if you do or not.
Not currently.
Not currently. What do you got for us, traffic, weather, sports?
35 minutes past the hour. Good morning once again to everyone out there. We're off to a relatively good start on the area expressways, roadways, and tollways. That earlier crash on the 294 Tri-State is all clear, but now we have a new crash in the western suburbs. Veterans Memorial I-355 northbound at the Boughton Toll Plaza. We have a crash blocking the left lane. So keep that in mind. One other area in the southwestern burbs, it looks like US 30 westbound right at I-55 there, out near Joliet in that area, far southwest. There's a crash as well. In the city, everything looking okay. No issues on the Edens or Kennedy. Eisenhower traffic building, but no accidents to report. Same with the Stevenson. Southside Expressway is looking good. Weather today, it's going to be a beautiful day for this time of year. The clouds are going to go away here later on this morning. Will be partly cloudy skies, a high of 76. Right now, it is mostly overcast and 68 degrees downtown. For our Phoenix listeners, some showers in the forecast today, and it cools down the temps a bit, a high of just 89. Right now, it's mostly cloudy and 88. In sports, the Cubs' magic number is down to 8 after they blew out the Diamondbacks for the second straight night, winning 9-1 last night. Brewers lost, so the Cubs have a 3.5-game lead over Milwaukee, 4 up in the loss column, as they look to win the division for the third straight year and make their 4th straight playoff appearance. White Sox lost in Cleveland, 5-3. Cheap.
And Morrow's out. How do you go from, not that we're supposed to know everything, or should we, how do you go from through 37 pitches off the mound, no pain, might be as early as tomorrow, to he's out?
Well, the same thing kind of happened with Darvish. He was progressing and no pain and did a rehab start and then did another one in South Bend and then all of a sudden had to leave in the second inning and shut down. I mean, it's one of those things, I guess. I don't know.
I
it reminds me a lot of what we went through in the early 2000s with Wood and Pryor. They were constantly hurt, and then they would come back, and you'd get excited, and they'd be throwing the towel, remember?
Yeah.
And then pain-free, and then they'd throw 20 pitches, and it's like, nope, shut down.
Yep. I wonder if Fergie Jenkins wasn't somewhat more right than people give him credit for, is that these guys need to throw more. That the sitting around not doing much and then going in and winging them 100 miles an hour and then not doing much for a few days is incredibly tough on your arm. He's been pitch batting practice between his starts when he went every fourth day.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know the right answer.
Probably different for everybody, actually.
I think it is probably different for everyone. I also think that these guys have so much money invested into these players that I think they're doing what they think is the right thing to do. They wouldn't do it the other way if they thought that, you know, pitching more was better. So they obviously don't think it's better.
Well, something's weird when you start seeing position players needing Tommy John surgery. I mean, I wonder if they're lifting too much or lifting wrong. I always thought when guys like who's the guy in the Bulls that hurt his knee and then he got hooked in with these trainers and he came back and he was like 20 pounds of solid muscle more than he was before, but he sure as hell didn't look like a basketball player. He looked like a safety.
Derrick Rose?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, you wonder if that, you know, it's really hard to, I mean, I mean, Dr. J would say to guys that all they did was concentrate on the bench, that they were susceptible when you hear somebody, a running back goes by and you put out your arm and all of a sudden the guy's got a torn pec muscle and John goes, that's because the guy's been nothing but doing bench. You know, you tighten that pec muscle up, and all of a sudden you get a big yank like that, and it's not loose enough.
Yeah.
I don't know. I mean, I'm no physical. Look at me. You know I'm not a trainer, for God's sake. speaking of which, I got to play golf on Friday.
How's that going to work? You haven't played golf in, what, 2 years?
At least. So the guy was dragging me out. This was the Marist fund outing in my high school. And he says, let's go out early and hit a bucket of balls. I said, the last thing we need to do is hit like 100 balls and then like rest and then go try and play.
Yeah.
That's not going to happen. We'll just take a couple of swings and go out and see what happens. It's a scramble. Yeah. Hope the other two guys are good. What can I tell you?
You could maybe share a small bucket to get loose, but yeah, I'm not going out in there and whacking 100 balls.
No, that would be it. I'm just hoping that I don't have to hit some good, so I don't have to hit too many.
The key to the scramble is if you can get the putter going, then you can at least bring some value, assuming you're not hitting anything else very well.
I'm always I'd be stunned if I still can't get off the tee. I mean, then I'd really have to hang them up. I can always do that.
Yeah.
And I can hit wedge shots, I suppose. Just everybody else can do everything else.
You just want to contribute.
The guy I'm playing with, who's been a contributor on the show, who will go nameless, I'll tell you how bad. We were playing in this outing in Blue Island. He walks up on the par three, and he hit the ball the wrong way. He was the first guy on the tee. And I go, what are you doing? Is that like some old ball you're getting rid of? He goes, no. I said, the green's the other way. Oh, that's the green we just got off of.
That's something I've actually never seen
before.
I've never
seen either. I said, I've never seen that in 50 years of golf. Somebody hit we just walked off that green. You know, you're hitting that back at it? Oh, yeah, that's right. I'm like, God. Anyway, it was bad.
He thought that would be easier.
Well, it probably was easier, yeah. So,
closer.
So what are you teaching your... What do you teach in your classes about? I wonder about this tariff thing, by the idea that we're not so anxious to tell people it's really a tax on them.
I was talking about the tariffs early in the semester, and I actually have a student from China, and he didn't understand why tariffs are a bad thing.
Well, a lot of people,
he was like, countries have to protect themselves. Tariffs are good. I'm like, oh, my God.
Well, that's...
But that just gives you but everything costs more. Well, so what? It's good for the country to protect themselves. That's what, he was all about. He didn't understand. He came up to me after class to talk about it, and he did not understand why tariffs are a bad thing, which I just thought was fascinating.
Well, do you think...
You know, he could see no negative behind a tariff.
Do you think that they're categorically...
Dig into it for him.
Do you think that categorically they're a bad thing in every instance?
Oh, no. No, absolutely not. But I think when you're using them to do battle as opposed to, that you're just arbitrarily throwing it out there as opposed to maybe... Especially if you're an emerging country and... You're trying to grow your internal industries, and you know, it's impossible because you're trying to work to a point of getting your costs down. I understand that, and I can understand China doing that, you know, 15 years ago, but continuing to be as protectionist as they are, and just kind of hanging this carrot out there that look at what a great big economy we are. You want to do business with us, which I question that one a little bit as well. I think using it in a punitive way is not a good thing. I think using it to, I think a perfect example of why it makes sense is in different types of food production. You want your farmers to keep farming because if you're dependent on some other country and they suddenly have a terrible drought one year, they're going to feed their own people before they feed your people. So for essentials, I think there's a good reason to do it as well. But I think this phrase gets banded around a lot, but for national security purposes, I think it makes sense. Or for country stability purposes, I think it makes sense. In the case that we're doing it right now, I don't know if it completely makes sense to be as extreme as we're being. I think there's probably a better way to go about doing it, but it's not the nature of this administration to, as we said as we went to break, to build some sort of coalition against China.
It's, I don't know, again, a lot of things are fascinating. I mean, that's why I love doing the show. Mm-hmm. What percentage of your class, or when you were in class, or when I was in class, realizes that before 1914, isn't that the year the income tax started, I believe, tariffs were 50% of the income of the government. And yet, yet not one article, not one headline, not one person, other than maybe moi, is putting out the word that this is income to our government that just cut taxes to one group of people. Now they're putting a tax on other people. And it's almost the equivalent in terms of dollars is the 1982 tax increase of Ronald Reagan after the 1981 decrease, which totally screwed up the Treasury. So I'm going to guess these guys are going to make almost as much on these tariffs than they are on certainly the tax cut to the middle class and lower class, which was pittance anyway. That you have probably, no, you're a one percenter guy.
Who told you that?
Oh, yeah, man, I found out from your banker.
Okay.
It only took three shots, and he told me. Three shots of Jack Daniels, I think it was. Anyway, but I'm saying if you're a median guy, you did save 75 hours on the tax cut, you're well beyond that now on what the terrorists have done to you just in the last 6 weeks, I think.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean.
It definitely is going to. It hasn't quite reached us yet. But you know what? It might actually, when individuals or people might actually realize that the tariffs are hurting them, is when we get into the Christmas season and all the junk that we buy from China costs an awful lot more.
Well, God help you if you go buy a car. It's going to be 10%.
Fewer things under the Christmas tree.
It's going to be 10% more in a car.
Yeah.
But I mean, how do you? I guess from an economic standpoint, put your PhD hat on. When you talk about, let's just say, we have tariffs on steel, because, hey, we build aircraft carriers. We want to make sure we have at least one steel company left here to buy steel for aircraft carriers. And like you mentioned, it's a national defense issue. Okay,
yeah.
I mean, Japan, they're not going to let every rice farmer in Japan go out of business because we in Vietnam can produce it cheaper, so they're going to have a tariff on rice. Same thing with the Canadians and their dairy farmers. We don't care about our dairy farmers here. They do. I mean, we honestly don't here. I honestly believe that. But they do. So they're willing to tax themselves to keep those guys in business. How many people here realize that when you go buy a new house, or like I do, you go to Home Depot damn near every Saturday and buy lumber because you got the endless remodeling project, that you're probably, you buy a new house, you're paying $3,500 to $9,000 more for that house because of our tariffs on Canadian wood products. That would probably put our guys out of business in a nanosecond, if they didn't have a tariff on it. Now, who determines as to whether or not it's better for 300 million people here to pay $4,000 more a house than to let, you know, our guys go out of business or not do as well or whatever. I mean, at some point, if it's $20,000 a house, I'm saying maybe it's not worth it. Certainly, if it was $100,000 a house, I'd say it's not worth it. I mean, who's our maven somewhere? And don't tell me it's Wilbur Ross or Larry Kudlow that decides, you know, that's enough. I mean, we have a sugar tariff forever, and so sugar, I'm going to say, is 12 cents a pound versus 10. Russell, I don't think any of our listeners even noticed that yet. Over a lifetime, it's probably, you know, $200. Well, more than that, because every time you go buy a candy bar, every time you get cotton candy or ice cream or soda pop, it's, I mean, you know what? I'm not so sure if you add all that up, what it might, because I don't know anything about that industry. But, who's to say whether it's enough or not? Do we really care that much about five sugar manufacturers? What if it was $10,000 in your lifetime, which every sugary thing you ever bought from the day you were hatched? I mean, what if it's $100,000? I mean, what's the number? Obviously, if it's $1,000 in my lifetime to keep all these sugar guys in business, I'll say knock yourself out. If it's $100,000, yeah, I don't know about that. I mean, who gets to make these calls?
It's not necessarily the, we had the inflation discussion yesterday. So it's not, I had to explain how the happy medium of inflation is really what you're shooting for in the economy. But it's not necessarily that absolute dollar amount, as it is a slow creep. We're also distracted by so many other things that we don't necessarily think that much of, a gallon of milk going up a nickel a year. But then when you start to reach your age and my age, you're like, man, I remember when that cost half what it does now. You know, it's the slow creep of inflation that doesn't necessarily get our attention, but a sudden jerk in a price, that's the one that gets our attention.
Well, if you don't, if you
that's what's going to start getting people's attention this fall.
Right. Well, if you scratch out,
they truly do start costing more.
But if you scratch out, which is a big scratch out. So I'm not. If you scratch out electronic devices, I mean, I know the first. I think my uncle, when he had a saloon in 1948, paid $300 for his first TV because he had to have it in the saloon. And I think it was like a 21-inch, like round. God, who'd even want to watch it? But you had to have it. You had the ball game on, right? So, I mean, we all know electronic stuff, all that stuff has come remarkably way down. But other stuff, you look at the fictitious CPI number.
You would have been very proud of me yesterday.
Uh-oh.
Talking about CPI and how it's unrealistic.
Well, I mean, the reason why I remember the days is not because I'm old necessarily, it's because I was so into it, because in 1978, I was doing all the inflation calculations for Pullman. And I was the guy who the inflation's up 2%, our price of the cars just went up here. Oh, by the way, we got to give the truck guy a little bit more. We got to give the air conditioning guy a little bit more. We got to give the union a little bit more. And I did all that. So I was very, very much into the fray, shall we say. So, I mean, but you look at, I'm going to say the guy on his line at Pullman, a skilled job, was making, I'm going to say 30 a year, 28, somewhere in there, 25. I mean, a house was 45, a car was 4, Notre Dame education was 4. Not the same guy's making 37, so he's up something percent. Notre Dame education 60, a car is 35, and a house is 200. How the hell is he doing?
Yeah.
And every one of those things, if you put the Notre Dame education 1978 in the CPI, a house in the CPI, and a car in the CPI, not one of those things, the CPI will say they should be half of what they are now. So it's not just what you're talking about. They're coming out with a number that says 3%. It's really 4. It's really 5 or 6 times 30 years or 40 years. So,
and those aren't showing. Those aren't showing up in the numbers.
I mean, it's a dramatic amount. Now you can go the same way and say, now instead of this funky TV for $300 that nobody would even watch today, you get a gorgeous TV for $300. Yeah, some stuff has gone the other way. Electronics. I mean, obviously a computer. You know how much it was for one of those old. What the hell were those things? The 10 something something. The IBM computers. Pullman had I'm going to say
they had like
25 of them in a concrete building air conditioned in Dallas. You know what the lease was per month for one of those?
Oh, I'm sure it was in the tens of thousands.
It was 20,000. Yeah. And the next iteration replaced six of those, and it was 18,000 a month. Mm-hmm. And I tried to rent the ones that came off, because we still had like a year or two left on the ones that were 20 grand. You know what I got for them a month?
How much?
1,200.
Yeah, I was gonna guess 1,000.
Plus you had to have them, they had to be water cooled, and you had to have them in an absolute environment where the temperature never changed more than 3 or 4 degrees, or the damn things blew up. So yeah, there's been dramatic changes to the good side. Okay, but the other stuff, the stuff a consumer bought, you're not even in the same league for a lot of things.
Yeah,
I mean, certainly,
price, and they've crept. There's been somewhat of a slow creep. The other thing is the tuition thing. A lot of people are only paying attention to it for 4 years, or it's only hitting them for 4 years.
That's if you only have one kid.
Right. If you're fortunate enough to have just one kid that you're putting through college.
But the issue that it affects, you know,
and
you,
that's the one that I bring up a lot in class, just because that's the one they're experiencing right now.
Well, I have a bill here. One of the listeners sent in when he was born in a little company, Mary Hospital, and he was there. His mother. Well, he was there too. But I don't think he remembers it. his mother was there.
He was there eventually. Yeah.
Well, no, he was there pretty much right out of the gate. You stayed like 5 days in those days. The total bill in the hospital, and that didn't include the doctor. Guess what the total bill of the hospital was for 6 days?
Oh, probably less than $1,000.
Including the anesthesia, including the stuff.
You can't even stay at a hotel. You can't even stay at a hotel for what it probably cost.
It was $240.
Oh wow!
It was like $40 a night plus the anesthesia was like $25.
Stay an extra night.
Well, so if you plunk $50 a night in 1953. And now it's got to be a G anywhere, right? I mean, what does it even cost in the hospital?
Oh, easily.
So say so if you plunk that in there, and so say it comes out that it should be 500 and it's 1,000. I haven't done the numbers. It's somewhat okay when you talk about inflation. It's somewhat okay if the nurse is also making 10 times what she did, and I'm saying she's not.
They're not.
And the doctors aren't either. Now, the question is, where is the dough? It's in this massive overhead of executives at the hospital and executives at the insurance company and places like that. It's almost for people that don't do anything, although they would be insulted if I said that.
Well, they're the SG&A, they're the the administration part.
Right. I wish you were here last week, Russell, because I talked about it may seem like I'm skipping around, but it's all sort of together. The amount of people in the University of California school system is like 2.5 times as many people that aren't teachers than.
Oh yeah, it used to be 1-for-1, and now it's about 3-for-1.
Yeah, and what are
as far as PhDs versus the, it's about 3-for-1 now.
That's
where the expenses got up.
Yeah,
and you know, once you hire people, it's darn near impossible to fire them.
Well, that's kidding.
I actually, Loyola's a great place. But I actually have a different person that kind of assists me on some of the administrative stuff for the graduate school and the undergraduate school. They're somewhat redundant, but now that you mention it, I have like a different person for my I teach a graduate class and an undergraduate class.
Well, that's what I want to do. I want to do something. When I grow up, I want to be part of overhead instead of actually having to trade for people. So just be overhead. What do you do? I watch everybody else. How much do you make? $1 million. So I just want to be overhead. Well, where are you playing golf? I can watch people out there.
You want to be the guy that takes the specs from the customers to the developers.
Yeah, I'm going to take the drawings from Boeing to China. How much do you think that guy got paid?
Yeah, you probably get a free trip and a lot of miles too.
One thing for sure, if you're as complicated as an airplane, I'm not so sure they're ready to come up with one yet. But I bet they can.
Oh, I don't think that. They may have thought that they could get the plans and copy that one. That's going to be a tough one.
I'll bet, though,
you know what? That's probably why Boeing said okay.
Well, maybe.
Yeah, here you go. Let me give you the plans.
But I'll bet there's certain stuff, a lot of the gauges, a lot of the electronics. I'll bet with a lot of work. I mean, it's not like these guys aren't dummies going to the same schools here we are. I'll bet they can right. reduce a lot of that stuff.
Well, there's just have you ever visited the Boeing plant in Seattle?
No, it's got to be
one of the coolest places I've ever gone. I went when I was a younger man on my own, and then we had a family trip out to Seattle, and I made my wife and kids go along, and needless to say, they were griping the whole time heading there, and then they were just absolutely fascinated with the plant. It's one of the biggest, you know, open air single rooms in the world, and they're basically moving planes through there as they put them together. But
yeah, it's kind of like an assembly line, right?
I mean, it's like Henry Ford didn't invent the car; he invented the way to make cars fairly cheap. Boeing can tell you how you make a plane, but then having to actually copy their process is a completely different thing.
Well, just the welding techniques, the aluminum welding. You know, you can't get that from a piece of paper.
No,
and especially
got,
when
you've got you know, engineers. It's a plant, but you see lots of people with AutoCAD software looking at each piece that they put on that thing, because it doesn't take much of a flaw for the plane not to work right.
Well, can you imagine the processes for fiber optic or for fibers that you can actually make an airplane tail out of that's strong enough? God, if you screw that up by 5%, you fall out of the sky, right?
Oh, yeah. I think I'm going to continue just to fly Boeing planes.
I was never big on the I was never big on the Airbus because they had the composite tail, and sure enough, one fell off in New York, right? And now I won't fly a 787.
It has a composite. Really?
It has a composite.
I love those things.
It's composite.
That's what I flew back from. Flew back on my last trip on.
I'm like the guy in what was the movie where he was the autistic kid who Dustin Hoffman played him. He only would fly.
Rain Man.
Yeah, he would only fly Qantas. They would only fly Qantas because they never had a crash.
That's right.
So Qantas didn't fly where they were going, so they had to take the old Buick.
Remember that part? Qantas doesn't fly from Cincinnati to Los Angeles.
Yeah, so he had to take the Buick.
Yeah.
What do you make of the election? Are these guys going to declare victory in China right before the election? I think they will.
Oh, of course.
Yeah.
Of course. No, well, this thing's still a toss-up. They keep telling us that. I really almost think it's going to come down to the 10-day news cycle leading up to it.
Yeah,
and who manages it best?
I think in the Senate, you're probably right. I've been reading stuff that for something, there's areas in California. Again, we're not California creatures, but that the Democrats are going to pick up 8 to 10 House seats just in California. That's a lot. I'm lucky enough to know who's running in my spot here and what he's doing, let alone, because actually I get kicked from person to person. I was Danny Davis for a while, and I just keep booted back and forth because my district flips back and forth.
We actually, who's the guy on the south side? Jesse Jackson Jr.'s spot.
Oh, I know what you mean, but
he was mine when I was in Hinsdale.
By the way, are you, real quick, because we got to go. Are you involved in these marijuana stocks? These things are going again today. Tilray is up 50% in pre-market trading. I'm not involved.
No,
in
and stuff. I was at a CFA meeting yesterday. They want to do something. They want to do something on investing in the marijuana stocks, and they actually noted that the market cap of that company is greater than Chipotle or Molson Coors. Which
That's wild.
I thought it was really funny that they threw. Something that you that we both things that you would use in conjunction with marijuana as their example. You would drink a beer, smoke a fatty, and then go, gorge yourself at Chipotle.
So how would you like to be Jeff Sessions? How would you like to be Jeff Sessions? Trump says I don't have an attorney general. S&P futures down 350. Dow futures down 15. We'll be back tomorrow. Stacks and Jacks. Thanks, Russell.
You betcha.
What did we learn, Palmer?
I don't know, sir.
I don't know either. I guess we learned not to do it again.
Stocks and Jocks is brought to you by PTI Securities and Futures. Go to ptisecurities.com. PTI ProDirect. Trade for as low as a penny per share and a dollar per option contract. Learn more at ptiprodirect.com. Nadex. Offering an intuitive way to trade the financial markets. Visit nadex.com. Home Source Realty. Call Audrey Johnson at 708-349-3456.
Hamzy Analytics. Listen to Fari Hamzy every other Thursday and visit HamzyAnalytics.com. ChiroMed. Back or neck pain? Schedule a complimentary consultation by calling 708-403-2727. Dax Research. Tune in for David Andelman's technical analysis on Mondays and Thursdays and call 1-800-821-4968.